The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
This evening, I went and checked the questions that I have on the link for this offering, a place where you can submit questions in advance, and I went to check, and there were a couple there, so I thought I'd start there. So the first question. I've been thinking lately that what the mind becomes aware of is something that's already present, as much as anything that is constructed and perceived through concepts can said to be present. So it's after the fact, just seeing what's already here to be seen by this mind. And yet a quote from the Dhammapada says that everything is preceded by mind, or something like that. And the quote is, all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, like the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never-departing shadow. So the question goes on. This seems to imply that the mind can condition or have an impact on whatever action or thought follows, as does the concept of intention. This seems contradictory to me. Perhaps I'm misunderstanding. Or is it just a paradox with no rational answer? It might be a misunderstanding. What this teaching is pointing to, in a very simple way, it's something that's clear to us. You know, that whatever we tend to do with our minds, whatever we tend to think, whatever we tend to engage with, as the Buddha said, whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. And so we know, we see that if I spend a lot of time thinking about how frustrated I am, it tends to create frustration. So this is, or tends to perpetuate frustration, we could say. And so this is basically what this teaching is pointing to, that whatever is coming up, whatever's arising, and all experience that we know, everything that we experience is experienced through the mind. That's another piece of this, that what we experience is experienced through the mind. There's nothing that we experience that's not experienced through the mind. Our senses receive sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and yet even those physical senses need the mind in order to be cognizant of them. So in the first part of the question, when you asked or spoke to, it seems like when I become aware, what I'm aware of is already here. That's true, and I think that's a beautiful recognition. And it's actually supportive to recognize that. I even alluded to that in the guided meditation. You know, what's arising, what you're noticing is already here. And so in a way, it doesn't make sense to resist it because it's already happening. And so perhaps we can use that recollection. Oh, what's being noticed? It's already here. Now, how we respond to that, how we connect with that in this moment does have an effect on what happens in the next moment. And that's what this teaching of all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind, also speaks to that how we are with what has arisen. So what we become aware of, the Pali word that is pointed to, what we become aware of is yata bhuta, that which has come to be. So it has already come to be. It's already here. And so, you know, what has come to be, we might as well really get to know what's already here and find a way that we might be able to respond skillfully to it to step forward into the next moment. If we respond skillfully to it, it tends to shape more of that skillful response in the future. If we respond unskillfully to it, if we respond to what's here out of reactivity, out of frustration, out of aversion, out of wanting to hold on, what that tends to condition or to create more of in the future is wanting to hold on and wanting to, you know, get rid of. And so very much how we are in this moment shapes what comes in subsequent moments. So that's very much what this teaching, experience conditioned by mind, led by mind, made by mind, means. Now, the piece that might be a little bit of the confusion is that when you said that the mind becomes aware of something that's already here. So mindfulness becomes aware of something that's already here. But what is here in this moment, it might be the confusion is that the thought that mind means that we are aware of what's happening. And aware of what's happening is one aspect of mind. It's a possibility, it's an amazing possibility of our minds that we can be aware of what's happening. That's the capacity of mindfulness. Mindfulness is one function of mind that might be present sometimes and might not be present sometimes. But if mindfulness is not present, it doesn't mean that mind is not working. Mind works. Mind perceives, mind recognizes, mind knows, mind thinks, mind feels, all many times without being aware that we're doing that. And so those experiences, those shapings, those processes, I think that's a good word, those processes that are happening in our mind when we're not aware of them, will be shaping what we experience. So that's really what that teaching is pointing to, that what we are experiencing in this moment has been shaped by prior conditions and a lot by the conditions of our own mind. It's not the only thing that shapes the present moment. There are other forces, other conditions that shape the present moment. But the one that the Buddha pointed to as being the condition that there's some measure of agency around, and agency doesn't necessarily mean I'm in charge, but that there is some capacity that our system can learn, our system understands and can learn that certain actions will lead to more ease and peace, and certain actions will tend to lead us towards more struggle and stress. And so there is some agency in the mind, and that the qualities that tend to shape whether we move in the direction of suffering or in the direction of more ease and peace, those are the ones that the Buddha pointed to, that there's some where suffering or freedom from suffering can happen. Whatever the other conditions are that come together, what the weather is, whether there's an earthquake or not, or whether I like the food I'm eating or not. I mean, there's so many different conditions, whether the body can digest the food I'm eating easily or not. There's so many different conditions that come together. But whether I suffer around those conditions is connected to this process of the shaping of the mind. And so the Buddha really pointed to this mind shaping, the processes of when greed, aversion, and delusion shape what's happening in the mind, we tend to move towards more suffering. When balance of mind, love, compassion, patience, generosity, equanimity, wisdom shape our or meet our experience, it tends to move us in the direction of more ease and more peace and more happiness. And so this is what the saying means when it says speak or act with the corrupt mind, or a mind that is has the inclination towards greed, aversion, and delusion, then suffering follows. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and more happiness follows. And in a very, in the deepest sense as well, and you actually alluded to this in the question too, you know, what we are experiencing is constructed and perceived through concepts. It's perceived through the mind. What we are experiencing is created by our minds. We don't experience anything without our senses, without the knowing that happens of that experience of the senses. We don't experience anything without the feeling and the perceptions that arise within our own minds. And so at an even deeper level, everything we experience, I was talking earlier about the key piece around the conditioning, the conditioned nature of what moves us towards ease and peace and what moves us towards struggle and suffering are those relationships to experience. Are we relating to experience from greed, aversion, or delusion, or with an allowing, curious attitude of mind? But at the deepest level, at the most fundamental level, that statement, all experience is preceded by mind. We do not experience anything without the mind constructing it. So at the deepest level, that is a very profound statement. That everything that we experience, it seems like we're experiencing what's out there. It's so, our minds are so good at representing what's out there. And it, you know, we can navigate the world pretty well, but what we are experiencing, the experience that I am experiencing of this room, the light that's coming in, the objects that I see, you know, it's created by the light waves that are striking the eye and an image being created in my visual cortex and then being understood and recognized there by mental processes, concepts. And it's not just the seeing, it's everything gets kind of woven together by all of the senses really kind of get woven together. So even the sound of my voice in this room kind of informs me about the space in some way. If I was sitting in a much bigger room, my voice would have a different quality. I would hear it in a different way. And so the senses kind of weave together to create the experience that we are having in the moment. And that's what we are experiencing. What we are experiencing has been created by our minds. It's really quite a profound understanding, and it's profound partly because that experience being created by our minds, it's very susceptible to influence by those relationships, by those ideas, by concepts, by views, by beliefs that we carry from prior experience. And so everything that we experience in this moment It's not like we're just cameras and microphones receiving exactly what's out there. It is shaped not only, it's not only shaped by the sensory processes and the concepts, the perception of those sensory processes, but also shaped by our prior relationships, our prior ideas and views and beliefs about what we are experiencing. And to not know that, to not be aware that what we are experiencing is not what's actually out there. You know, we think it is, but it's a form of delusion to believe that our senses are kind of accurately receiving reality. They do a really good job of it. I think they do an amazing job of it. But in my own exploration, I've seen, you know, just how views and ideas can get in there and shape the relationship. You know, something I see that actually sometimes seems very neutral, at other times, depending on the mood in my mind, I'm very annoyed by it. So the mind, what has happened before, shaping what is being experienced in this moment. And being aware of that, the awareness of that is what is so profoundly transformative. When we can be aware that our minds are shaping what we're experiencing, and be curious about how our minds are shaping what we're experiencing, and get familiar with those parts of the mind that are shaping it in the direction of struggle and stress and suffering. Seeing that, feeling the suffering of it, seems to be part of how the mind, how the human system, how the human process begins to learn to reorient away from thinking that getting rid of things, holding on to things, being confused about things, believing that getting something that I want is going to be how I'll be happy, believing that getting rid of something that I don't want is going to be how I'll be happy, that those perspectives create stress, create suffering, create struggle for this system. We feel it, and we begin to understand that those processes that create that stress are optional. They are also created by the mind. They think they're doing something for us, but we're very confused about that. They think that they're helping us. But when the mind starts to see, when the human system starts to see that they're not actually helping us, in fact, they're creating pain and stress and suffering, our human system begins to understand and to orient towards figuring out how to let go of those, towards releasing them. And this is how wisdom develops. This is how wisdom grows. And we also see that when we do engage with curiosity and allowing, which I pointed to in the guided meditation, can we allow what's here, even if it's resistance? Allowing resistance gives our system the opportunity to see that that experience, I said it sounded paradoxical, but the experience of it is not paradoxical. It sounds paradoxical that we can allow non-allowing. But the experience of it is that we feel some space that, oh, what's happening right now is the mind is resisting this. And we understand what the mind is doing as a happening in the mind. And the experience of allowing it is simply the recognition, oh, that's what's going on right now. It doesn't feel paradoxical at all. It feels very clear. Oh, that's what's going on right now. And there's also a sense of kind of spaciousness that comes with that. And our system understands the value of that kind of allowing attitude. It feels the kind of release from the being caught in the non-allowing. It understands that that perspective of allowing the non-allowing creates more ease and peace. And so it's quite clear, so not at all paradoxical in that way. So that's my reflection on that question, and I'm curious if there's any other comments or reflections about what I said, or confusions, or any other questions? Anything else up? So from the chat, it feels like the suffering is being understood only intellectually, because even though we feel it in the moment, we tend to do the same thing next time, causing the same suffering. That can definitely happen. That we do see something, and sometimes the suffering is, there is a way that we understand it intellectually. We can be thinking about it. Oh, this is why I'm struggling. This is why I'm experiencing stress. But there's a difference. There's a difference in feeling when our mind understands or feels, oh, what's happening right now is there's a wanting something to be a certain way. And when we allow it, we feel the kind of sense, or we see, oh, there's a kind of a tension associated with that suffering, but we also feel a sense of kind of space around that tension. So that felt sense of some release that happens with the seeing of suffering, that's not intellectual. And we will still do it again, partly because it's deeply conditioned. So and not even partly, I think that's mainly, it's mainly because it is so deeply conditioned. The habits of mind, the tendencies are very strong, our conditioning. How many times have we practiced that particular flavor for myself, How many times did I practice self-hatred and anger before I started noticing it as a phenomenon? Many, many, many times. So it was deeply entrenched. And when we are not mindful, when we're not, so, and those patterns and habits, like how the mind picks up something to get angry about, or how the mind picks up something to get self-judgmental about, so deeply conditioned, there's a lot of like avenues or pathways into that tendency. And so it may be that we've seen one piece of the puzzle, one part of the one piece or one way in that the mind understands. Oh yeah, the mind got caught by that in that moment. And in this moment, seeing, oh yes, there's some possibility of not going there. So we see it in this moment, but it's the seeing or the mindfulness, the capacity to be aware in that moment of what's unfolding, that often will allow that space that allows us to see and move in the direction of not suffering with it. But if we are not aware, which we are not aware a lot of the time, if our mindfulness falls away, those habits have a lot of avenues in to pick up. So just thinking about, the number of times that we have engaged with something, a particular habit or pattern, and a few times, even 5, 10, 100 times of seeing it is a drop in the bucket in terms of how many times we've done it. So it takes patience, it does take time, and fortunately, what I can tell you At one point, seeing in my self-hatred, looking at the self-hatred, there was this one moment where it was like my mind saw into the depth of the conditioning. It saw the myriad branches that went back so far back in my life. And I felt like, oh my gosh, that is just so deep and so huge. It's gonna take a really long time to undo all of those things that I, all those times I picked up that pattern. It's gonna take, I felt like it was gonna take just as long to undo all of them. But I can tell you, fortunately, it does not take just as long to undo them. Because there are some very deep seeings that begin to see, kind of like the Buddha pointed to, he said at one point, there's kind of like a seed in our, he used a visual analogy, I think. I'll see if I can find this image. But he says something like, there's a seed in our eye, very difficult, a splinter. He called it a splinter in our heart, very difficult to see. And that splinter being basically the misunderstanding around how happiness comes to be. And when that splinter can be pulled out or removed, the suffering does. It's the linchpin that's holding all of those prior habits and patterns together. And so, though there's some linchpins that like we can see, and when those are seen, sometimes whole patterns can just fall away. So it does take patience and persistence. We don't get to decide when we see that splinter and when it gets kind of removed. The Buddha really did speak a lot about the gradual nature, the gradual unfolding of the path, the gradual wearing away of the fetters, the ways that we're tied to our habits, our views, our conditioning. And yet, it is not as long for as long as we're engaged, it's not as long for it to undo as it took for it to do, which is a great thing. But it does sometimes seem like, wow, I've seen this so many times. Why is the mind still doing this? And it's doing it because there's some place in there that believes it's helpful. There's still something in there that thinks, this is going to do it for me. This is going to help me. And until that is really seen through, we'll probably keep having to look at it. And getting to feel the release too, because when we do have the courage to recognize, oh, did it again. Well, the mind pulled it up again and it's doing the same thing again. When we have the courage to look at it without judging ourselves for it, but just that, oh, there it is again. That kind of allowing perspective creates the conditions for the mind to learn something from that pattern, from that habit, and maybe even to see the misunderstanding that's in there.